He's Rodney Boyd, Rod the Bod. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. We thought the election was over, but apparently not in Florida.
You know, you would think that by now, the state that would proactively be the best prepared to reduce the scandal would be Florida. I mean, they have been now, what, 20-something years consistently getting it not right, but getting it complicated, confusing, and potentially wrong. And it just doesn't seem like that should be. And this is the state that has the most spotlight on it every election cycle. It tends to be the state that their impact has some of the most interesting effects on national elections. I just can't believe that we're here again, that these folks are trying to, you know, still count votes starting like 12 hours ago. It baffles me.
Yeah, and here we are again, and I know there'll be a recount in Florida. The Georgia thing is the one that's most fascinating to me, Rodney. I don't know if you've been paying any attention down there, but they're trying to force a recount of some of these ballots that have been thrown out, the provisional ballots. And here's sort of the breakdown as of November 8th. There were 3,700 provisional ballots in Fulton County, which is down there around Georgia. 1,800 of them were found to be duplicates, so that's why they weren't counted. They only accepted 355 of them, and almost 1,000 of them were people who didn't even vote in the right county.
Right. You know, what's amazing is that there's been a lawsuit filed by the Abrams camp, the Democrat camp, to challenge, to try to push this. And here's the thing that just seems to me. At best, what would happen is there would be a runoff. And I don't know that the odds or the chances of her winning go up if there's a runoff, but if you have to sue to get to the next level of a contest, I'm not so sure that's the best pathway to the office of governor in any state. So, I mean, there used to be this idea that, look, you know, you want all the votes to be counted, but you also want the dignity of the office or the process to remain intact. And I've never seen anybody successfully, you talked about a recount overturning an election, I've never seen anybody sue their way into office. I just don't know that, I don't know that there's a precedent for filing a lawsuit, getting an additional vote, and then that's the pathway to victory. So it just seems like, you know, both Florida and Georgia are going to undergo these processes, which are aberrant and unnormal. I understand people want every vote counted, so that should happen. But, I mean, we have to just get beyond the idea that you can somehow, after the election day, find a way to redo the election and change the outcome. I mean, so I just think it's troubling to me in both of these states. And in any other part of the country where we get past election day, people have voted, and yet we're still litigating vote results and recounting and all this nonsense in the 21st century. Shouldn't be.
Well, no, it shouldn't be. And you know, even if you go back to 2000 and Gore and Bush and all that, there were lawyers involved because the stakes were so high, but it didn't end up overturning anything. So
no, it did not.
To me, it's just an effort, an opportunity for Stacey Abrams and for Gillum, who clearly both have higher aspirations, to keep their name in the public, in front of the public, for another period of time.
And Gillum actually conceded, and then later, I guess when the lawyers got to him, told him, hey, wait, then he withdrew his concession. I mean, this is just, I don't know that there's ever been a pathway to success based on what we're seeing right now.
So Rodney, let me ask this question. In both of those races, but to a greater extent in Georgia, the allegation from the Democrats down there is that there was a voter suppression on the part of Brian Kemp to, I guess, because of their voter ID laws and all this stuff, they've accused him of vote. There were racial overtones to those allegations. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, there were racial overtones, but there was an opportunity, as we all saw, for those issues to be litigated before the election day. My only concern is we should have an election day. We should get every vote counted, and then we should be able to take the results and move forward. And so everything you're talking about was talked about months before the election. So there were opportunities to go to court, file whatever motions. Those things were done. The courts of Georgia made their rulings, and so we're kind of, you know, we went into election day where there were those allegations were not novel, not new, and not surprising. So I find it hard to believe that whatever the allegations were about the voter suppression changed or in any way impeded the outcome of the election the day or the weeks after. That's my only, that's my takeaway. Now, maybe I'm absolutely wrong and maybe I'll be shocked, but it just seemed to me that those things were being said, those allegations were being made, you know, Mark, months ago.
Yeah, but we also heard it here in Missouri, for example, dealing with voter ID. In fact, a judge, I think they went back to a retired judge, didn't they, and pulled a judge out of retirement to look at this issue again, who then, right before the election, pulled the voter ID law, despite the fact that, you know, they went to great lengths to make sure this thing was written properly. But what do you think? I mean, I don't think you have to do anything in this country. You have to have an ID, except to vote.
No, absolutely. You have to have an ID. And even in most, and I don't know Georgia law, but I think it's probably similar. If you are indeed a registered voter, I believe in all the states you can provide, you can file a provisional ballot and prove up your identity within a certain time. Certain.
Sure.
That is not the issue that they're talking about in Georgia or Florida. They're talking about some aberrant issues which are foreign to us. I mean, so there's not a circumstance where a person who's a citizen, who's a registered voter, who for whatever reason on election day could not find their ID, could not cast a provisional ballot and then true up their or sure up their identity at a point, at a reasonable point in time based on whatever the applicable law is. So I just, I mean, it's troubling because I don't think that we should have, if we start this process of overturning elections after Election Day, when we went into the ballot knowing, and think about this, a lot of this is tied to people, to certain laws. So if you think about, there were allegations of voter stuff from all over the country, but where people won and accepted the Election Day outcome, we're not hearing the same hue and cries. I mean, there were stories popping up about people in certain counties who didn't have a voting place. Those stories are not being talked about now because people won. So
yeah.
I just think we just have to be very judicious and careful about relitigating elections. I mean, it's a high bar. You know, kudos to people who accept the outcome of elections and think that what they got to do is they got to do a better job of getting their base out in the subsequent election and not try to relitigate it now. But having said that, you know, people have the right to use the courts. I just think that we are creating a, potentially creating a pattern that means Election Day is not the final day for choosing candidates, but it's the stage. It sets the stage, if you will, for all these other colorful things. And if we knew these things going in, these concerns, and we litigated them before, and it still didn't produce the win that some people wanted, I respect that, but that's just not the way we do our elections. We don't have the do-overs in elections.
It's a good point. Hey, let me turn your attention to Governor Parson for a minute. I read in the Missouri Scout this weekend some speculation about people challenging him in a primary. I was under the impression that Governor Parsons didn't intend to run for re-election when he was first appointed.
You know, I
true or not? Not appointed, took over.
I was always under the impression that he was leaving that decision open and had not made any.
Oh. Okay.
Precise. Hey, I'm not going to or not, but I think Governor Parson most probably is going to run again. I never understood that he wasn't, but I don't think he went into his appointment immediately campaigning for re-election. I think what the governor wanted to do, according to his team, was to figure out if there was a pattern or a pathway to put the state back on track and have some success in governance and restore people's confidence in Jeff City. And I think having at least started on a path of doing that, he probably is definitely planning on running again.
Right.
Or running. I mean, let me correct myself. Running for the first time. He's never run for governor.
And the Democrats are their sole star power right now seems to be focused on Nicole Galloway because she's the only statewide elected Democrat right now, and she out garnered votes from Claire McCaskill by a huge amount, even in Claire McCaskill's home county, right?
Yeah, and you know she did that. But if you look at Nicole Galloway, what people were very responsive to was Nicole Galloway, put partisan politics aside, was a pretty decent auditor. She would go into counties, she would look at issues in somewhat of a nonpartisan fashion when she did her audits. So there were counties like Cass County and other counties, and everybody wasn't enamored with her, but people knew her. People had a sense that she had a kind of integrity to be the auditor that they were comfortable with. So she pulled a lot of votes based on people's knowledge of how she conducted herself as an auditor. And once again, like the governor, this was her first time being on the ballot. So she connected to people. And if you go to the Claire McCaskill side, Ms. McCaskill had been in office for 28 years or whatever total, different jobs. And people said, we also know her and we want to do something different. So both of those candidates had one thing I think that was sort of common. People had a sense of who they were, and they either wanted to keep Nicole or they did not want to keep Senator McCaskill. But these were not these weren't people that weren't known, and people had to get to know them. People based their votes, I think, in those two races. And that's why in one county you could see Nicole win by 20% over Claire McCaskill. A lot of people in those counties knew both ladies, and they had a perspective on both candidates, and they voted with their experience and their perception of those candidates.
Sure. Rodney, are you hearing anything from the Capitol on a replacement for Josh Hawley? Because there could be sort of a domino effect down there, right?
This is kind of the big buzz right now, because for most people who probably hadn't thought about it, you've got Mike Parson, who took over after Greitens resigned as governor. He first appointed the lieutenant governor, and there were some issues around that seemed to have settled. There's a lawsuit filed, but it seems like that was accepted. There's no question that the governor now gets to appoint the successor for Josh Hawley, and there are some big names. I mean, we've got a state treasurer at one time, Eric Schmidt, that at one time was thinking about running for attorney general. You've got Secretary Ashcroft. Most people don't know this, but Secretary Ashcroft is a lawyer.
Right.
And so he would be someone that could be appointed. And then there are a bunch of other names. Kurt Schaefer, people might remember, he ran against Josh Hawley in the primary and lost. And there's some other talented people that are out there that will probably be whispering their names in the interim. Because it's a great, it's the second most, in my opinion, second most powerful statewide position is the attorney general, the state's top lawyer. That post has been, a springboard to many great, broader careers. But in spite of where it takes you, that post itself is incredibly important to the people of Missouri. So this is one that the governor is going to want to think long and hard about and get right. But you're correct. There could be this scenario where if he was to appoint either of the current people I mentioned, Treasurer Schmidt, Secretary Ashcroft, then he would literally create a situation where he would have to now appoint their successor.
Right.
Think about this optic. You'd have a governor who became governor because of a resignation, so never been on the ballot for that post, who's appointed the lieutenant governor, potentially would have, well, he will appoint the attorney general, and if he picks an incumbent, will have appointed now another statewide
office. Either the treasurer or the secretary of state, right.
So four people that would be serving in four of the more important positions in state government would have never been elected.
And I talked to Jim Talon about this the other day, not to drag it out, but I heard his wife Brenda's name from the Show Me Institute mentioned for maybe one of those openings if that happens. So that would be interesting indeed.
Well, I'm told it's going to come pretty quickly. We'll probably have the decision on the AG made soon.
Oh, good.
Even before Christmas. And with that, we'll have a lot to talk about. Yet still, this will be one of the most incredible years. We didn't even get to the fact that they're going to start promulgating rules on medicinal marijuana, Clean Missouri passed. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's, this is going to be an incredible, when we look back on 2018 in Missouri and the nation, but in Missouri, this is going to be the year that sort of recalibrates who we are as a state as we move into 19 and 20.
Yep, it's a good point. Rodney Boyd, it's always a pleasure, buddy. Thank you for the information.
Thank you.